Gathering near its end, Father Gunn assembled the criminals together in the school. Correct me if I have made an error in identifying any of the most evil people it has ever been my misfortune to meet, he said in a terrible tone. Their faces told him that his information had been correct. Mr. Kelly is a man with large hands, said Father Gunn. He has declared his intention of using them to break your necks. However, I told Mr. Kelly that you had all volunteered to wash every dish and plate and cup and glass, that you would pick up every single piece of litter that has fallen around the school. There was silence. When other bad deeds are hard to remember, Father Gunn went on, this one will always be to the forefront of the mind. This June day in 1950 will be etched there forever. He could see that Eddie Barton and Maura Brennan's faces were beginning to pucker. He mustn't frighten them to death. So now, he said, you will join the guard of honour to wave goodbye with your hypocritical hearts to His Grace, whose visit you did your best to destroy. Out! He glared at them. Out! This minute! Outside, the bishop's party was about to depart. The bishop was moving from person to person, saying that it did the heart good to get out to see God's beautiful nature from time to time. What a wonderful tree this is! He looked up at the copper beech as if to thank it. And what's all this writing on the trunk? Father Gunn heard the Kellys' intake of breath. This was the tree where the children always inscribed their initials, complete with hearts and messages saying who was loved by whom. Too secular, too racy, too sexual to be admired by a bishop. But no, the bishop seemed by some miracle to be admiring it. It's good to see the children mark their being here and leaving here, he said. Like this tree has been here for decades, maybe even centuries back, so will there always be a school in Shancarrig to open the minds of its children and to send them out into the world. Father Gunn turned to look once more at the criminals. Because the day hadn't been ruined, he gave them half a smile. They didn't dare to believe it. Maddie Ross. When Maddie Ross was 18 years old in 1950, there were a great many things lacking in her life, like any plan of what she was going to do, like any freedom to go away and do it. Her widowed mother needed somebody at home, and her brother had gone out to Rhodesia to live with an uncle who had a farm the size of Munster, so Maddie would be the one to stay. The Rosses had a small house near Barna Woods. Maddie loved the woods most in autumn when the ground was a carpet of leaves. She would tell stories about where she found golden and scarlet branches and of how children in bare feet played by the big rock that overlooked the town and ran away when anyone approached. They were harmless stories, the imaginary friend stories of all children. Nobody took any notice. She was slim and willowy like her mother, with blonde hair, but she had these curious pale eyes. The lightness somehow gave her a colourless quality, as if she wasn't a proper person. A more determined young woman might have made a decision about finding work for herself or friends, but she was really only on the fringe of things, like the day they had the dedication of the school, the day the bishop came. Maddie Ross stood slightly apart from the rest of Shancarrig. Mrs. Kelly looked at her speculatively. I think the time has come to get a junior assistant mistress, she said to Maddie. Do you think we should talk to your mother about it? I think she's a bit set in her ways now, said Maddie. She might be able to teach. I meant you, Miss Ross. Oh, of course, yes, well, Maddie said. To her surprise, when Maddie began next term, she loved teaching the class called Mixed Infants. Before she had gone into the school, Maddie Ross barely noticed the children of Shancarrig. Now she knew everything about them. The ones that sniffled and seemed upset,